making TV special.
Donuts. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Looks like 2009 is going to be a very sorry year. That's more new music from Morrissey. Sorry doesn't help. And it doesn't. And it won't. But they keep trying. Welcome to the B-side of episode 111 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you from my living room in downtown Portland, Oregon. Still fighting a cold. Still fighting all the insane news and developments that I can't even hope to do justice for. But we'll continue to try, and me, and hopefully tons and tons of other people are going to do similar things and spread the word. I talked earlier today to my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com from Japan. We had a nice Skype conversation. He interviewed me for an upcoming episode of CorbettReport.com. So it was awesome to get to talk to him. I hope to be able to return the favor very soon, and I'll keep you posted when that new episode of Corbett Report is available. Right now, we're going to start with the very sorry year with an op-ed piece from the Fresno Bee that I posted up for you. It looks like 2009 is going to be a very sorry year, and I posted it up as something a little light and fluffy to, of course, let you off the hook for just a minute from all the other far worse news. It's interesting, and of course, it's a media meme, so we want to look at it. I know it's a little early to call, but I'm thinking 2009 is going to be the year of I screwed up. We'll start right at the top. Our president uttered those words a little more than a week ago when some of his cabinet appointments took an embarrassing turn. While President Obama got a lot of fun and furor poked at him from the conservative talk radio gabbers, I found something earnest and transparent in standing up and saying, yeah, my bad. And this week, Alex Rodriguez, baseball's biggest name and the guy who was supposedly to cleanly bring the game out of the steroid era, got busted for being on the juice. What does the ever sly A-Rod do? Owns up. Apologizes. True, he only admitted it once he was caught, a PR ploy for sure, but he's willing to wear the I screwed up tag when Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens aren't. Which brings us to Michael Phelps, who went from Olympic hero to high times with one picture of him hitting a bong with some college kids. Are you surprised? Come on, he listens to Lil Wayne a lot, and, you know, did you see Katie Couric's interview with Lil Wayne? Wow. But back to Phelps, he also played the I screwed up card. I engaged in behavior which was regrettable and demonstrated bad judgment. Exhibit 4, Christian Bale. And the article goes on, and they reference Chris Brown, alleged girlfriend beater of Rihanna, and they were going to be at the Grammys and yada yada, and the octuplets mom. All these things are interesting as a way to begin a year full of sorrow. And of course, it's interesting that our president now has admitted mistakes and apologized for things, whereas you couldn't pull teeth from the previous administration to ever apologize or say they screwed up anything. So it does look like 2009 is going to be a very sorry year. Two nights ago, I believe. Of course, I should say it's about 11 o'clock Thursday night, February 19th, 2009. So on February 17th, at the end of that night, hundreds of TV stations went digital anyway, even though, of course, the changeover has been delayed until June. So this was posted up early Wednesday morning on February 18th, the first day. Did you go digital last night? And if you did, and if you have, maybe you should open up your analog-to-digital converter box. But we'll get to that in just a minute. Hundreds of TV stations went digital overnight from the AFP. More than 600 U.S. television stations will transmit digitally only on Wednesday after cutting off their analog broadcast signal overnight as part of a nationwide switch. The Federal Communications Commission, FCC, said a total of 421 television stations plan to end their analog broadcast at midnight Tuesday, joining 220 stations that have already made the switch. U.S. President Barack Obama signed a bill last week delaying the nationwide shift to digital television until June, but some stations were given the green light by the FCC to make the shift on the original February 17th date. The FCC said 641 stations, or 36% of the nearly 1,800 full-power television stations in the United States, will have ended analog broadcasts by Wednesday. Major TV networks such as ABC, CBS, Fox, and NBC are not among those planning to cut off their analog broadcasts overnight. February 17th was the date set by the George W. Bush administration for an end to analog broadcasts by television stations, but Congress voted to extend the date until June 12th. The government has been providing Americans who rely on over-the-air signals with a $40 coupon to defray the cost of buying a digital converter box. But the coupon program has run out of funds, and according to research firm Nielsen Company, More than 6.5 million American households are not prepared for the switch. Many of the unprepared are low-income households, minorities, seniors, or disabled, according to Nielsen. The switch to digital television will free up wireless airwaves for public safety agencies and other advanced mobile services. The freeing up of these other airwaves is, of course, the point of the two episodes that I mention anytime we're mentioning the DTV switch. My man Clyde Lewis at the Ground Zero Lounge. So some of the links in this story, hundreds of TV stations went digital overnight, is to, first, Ground Zero Lounge, Panopticon, the Pandemonium configuration, the episode of Ground Zero Lounge from back in December. We also have the second episode. That one's called Wetwired, Converting to Tunnel Vision, Panopticon 2. And that was from the beginning of January. So then, speaking of... Oh, wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll get to the latest episodes of Ground Zero Lounge from Clyde Lewis in just a moment. However, when I asked you if you went digital overnight, I mentioned that we should all open up our converter boxes, which I do not have. And I actually talked to my brother just a little bit ago, and he said he was just checking out MediaMonarchy.com today. Hadn't looked at it in a little while. I asked him what grabbed him, and he said... camera and mic in Magnavox digital conversion box. This story and this video from Mechanism Studios, that's the name of the YouTube channel, and they write that they have a friend who's kind of a conspiracy theorist trying to tell them that many of the digital TV converter boxes that are coming out have microphones and cameras built into them. Knowing a little bit about electronics, person behind Mechanism Studios bought one of the devices and opened it up, fully intending to prove that crazy conspiracy theorist wrong. Much to their surprise, they were right. This Magnavox device has both a miniature camera lens and what looks like a microphone.
So I bought one of these digital converter TV boxes. I actually bought two of them. And I had a friend that was trying to tell me that they put cameras in these things. That, you know, that you set it on your TV and you know, somebody, the government or whoever, has the ability to spy on you. And so what I did is I opened it up to prove them wrong. And lo and behold, this is a Magnavox unit, by the way, that was purchased at Walmart. Lo and behold, though... as you can see, right here is the camera unit. There's actually if I can focus here, a microphone. Here's the RF sensor. So not to confuse the camera for, you know, what you would use as a remote control. But clearly you can see this thing does in fact have both a camera and a microphone mounted. There's the microphone, there's the camera. So I'm going to get a couple more of these from different manufacturers. Again, this one's a Magnavox. See, this is the only one that has a camera in it, or if this is a ongoing trend. So hopefully I'll have more details in the future.
Camera and mic in Magnavox digital conversion box. Lots of comments, lots of back and forth saying this is a hoax, this is bullshit. But this has been discussed before, whether it's Comcast or other sort of Minority Report style technologies. It's real. It's very real. And it's only going to become more real. Camera and mic in Magnavox digital conversion box. We, of course, went over the new patent filed by Apple recently about moving your webcam, which on mine, as I'm looking at it right now, sits on the top of your screen. They're looking at a way to have it behind the screen. But let's move to two of the latest episodes from my man Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge, recorded live here every week at Dante's Inferno in downtown Portland, Oregon. some difficulties getting Ground Zero Lounge over the last couple weeks. And if you listen to the beginning of one of these episodes, Clyde mentions that they're switching everything over. Ground Zero Lounge is blowing up big, and they're moving a lot of their files and a lot of their things, I believe, over to other servers. So there are two new episodes. The first one I've only got for you in audio. The second one I've only got for you in video. So we're going to check out a moment from both of these. First, from February 2nd, Ground Zero Lounge, From Change to Strange, The Alien Body Politic. President Obama has been meeting with NASA. The mainstream press says it's about the space race. However, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have been called in, too. What on earth is happening?
Tonight's show is called From Change to Strange, The Alien Body Politic. The reason why I'm calling it this is because, well, I've been very, towards the, I guess it was the, about, oh, around the times of the debates, Democratic debates, there was a lot of talk about aliens and UFOs. And I don't know if you guys remember that far back, but I remember Dennis Kucinich was asked, you saw a UFO in Seattle when you were at Shirley MacLaine's house. Do you believe in UFOs? Do you believe in aliens? And if you do, tell us how you feel. Well, then the questions then, Tim Russert at the time, who's now passed away, Tim Russert was the guy who gave those questions, and he continued to send the questions out to the other candidates to see how they felt about this. Well, I had speculated for the longest time why the politics of UFOs and aliens were so important. And now that Barack Obama has become president of the United States, we are going to realize more and more why they are important. I'm going to try and point this out to you tonight with this program, with this show we're going to be broadcasting. And the first thing I want to tell you is that I received an email from James at MediaMonarchy.com, and he pointed out to me some very interesting coincidences that he wanted me to investigate about Barack Obama and how lately he's been having meetings with NASA. A lot of people don't know this. It hasn't been part of the mainstream. It's been kind of buried in the back. Barack Obama has been very interested in outer space. He's been thinking about what's going on up there. And we had talked about some of the strangeness that has been going on out there and wondering what the Obama administration was going to do about what is going on out there. We do know that a lot of what is going on out there is being mixed in with global warming and all that stuff. But the funny thing is that Al Gore had to cancel his global warming summit because Washington, D.C. was snowed in. Yeah. England now has had the worst snow that it's ever had in its, what, in about 24 years. They're getting snow right now. And so I don't know what to think about this. And it's really embarrassing if you're going to go to Washington, D.C. to talk about how the Earth is warming when everything is in a deep freeze. We had some of the coldest winters, well, coldest winter here in Oregon and the whole northern part of the United States during December. Christmas was a bust because no one could go out and shop because it was so cold. So apart from the global warming, we need to consider, well, actually, we need to also put our minds out there, because out there is where it's at right now. Not down here. Down here, everything seems to be okay except for the economy. But out there is where all the action is going on and the mainstream news is avoiding it. Now, I was saying, it seems there needs to be a rush for Barack Obama to get us back into outer space, and he's had some interesting meetings with NASA on the subject of space race with the Chinese government. The Chinese are now, they're trying to be space, they're thinking along the lines of going back to moon, the Chinese. And Obama's saying, well, when are we going back to the moon, NASA? And NASA's saying, oh, we're not going to be able to go until 2015 or 2020, which to me sounds pretty stupid. I don't understand the logic of this. I don't understand how 40 years ago we went to the moon, and now it's going to take us at least another 10 years to go back. So that's 50 years from the first time we landed on the moon. We're going back, and Obama's going, that doesn't play right with me somehow. I want to know why we can't go to the moon next week. I want to know why we can't go to the moon in 2 years. I want to know why we can't go out even farther, and that's what Obama's asking. Can we take the missiles that we use for war, turn our hooks into plowshares? Can we take the weapons, turn them into something peaceful, and fire them up into space and land them out on the moon again? That's what he's asking. And NASA, of course, is piddling around with the prospect. And the question is, why is there such a rush to go into space? Why is Obama wanting to do this? Well, tonight we're going to try to speculate as to why there's a need for Obama to sit and knock on NASA's door saying, give me the answers to these questions because I need to know them now. With the economy plummeting, it's no comfort to hear that every year we pump $17 billion into the space program at NASA. $17 billion to go to NASA, and that money is seldom questioned by the American taxpayer. We go crazy when we hear money going to the coffers of big business and big banks, but we don't stop and think the $17 billion of that money is going into NASA.
From change to strange, and that's awesome that my man Clyde took some of the links and some of the questions that I had emailed him and started to explore it further. February 9th, Ground Zero Lounge, Blood Cement, the hard baptism of Abraham, Obama, and Osama.
Tonight's show is going to be kind of a spooky show, mainly because of what I'm about to talk about. And many of you have lived through and have heard a lot of what I've talked about before. It's kind of a review and it's kind of an interesting thing that I want to bring up. It's called Blood Cement, the hard baptism of Abraham, Obama, and Osama. Now, this is kind of interesting because remember we talked about the Amun-Ra show a couple weeks ago. We talked about how words matter and how when you say certain words and phrases like the inaugural, you need to pay attention to what's being said and you need to look into what's being said because it means a lot of things for the future. They set the agenda at these get-togethers, at the inaugurals, at the pageantry. They set the agendas for what the future is supposed to be. So, what I want to talk about is what I mean by the hard baptism of Obama and Osama. The turmoil that's going on in the Middle East right now, especially with Israel, there have been many anti-Semitic webpages gaining popularity, and in them are mentioned post-apocalyptic nightmares that exist, and of course the protocols of the Elders of Zion are mentioned. They're used as tools to push the agenda of Jewish conspiracy to rule the world. However, this anti-Semitic, the anti-Semitic sites in there only have a half right, okay? There's more to it than this. The conspiracy really is about a force darker than can be comprehended, and that it is based in the ancient rituals found in Babylonian magic. A lot of the things found in the Talmud are about Babylonian magic. We talked about Babylonian magic, or the secret schools, if you will, the mystery schools, the magic workings that are being used to corrupt internally what's going on with religions and what's going on with governments, what's going on in politics, all setting us up for what is known as the New World Order. And many people believe the New World Order is here, it's just that a lot of people have not realized it yet, and they're not pushing the revolution to get rid of it. You see, the magical workings that we hear about are jointly produced with elements of all of the religions, the ancient writings that are in such workings that we found in the Talmud, the Quran, the Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Bible, the Kabbalah, and the ancient books of Enoch. Now, all powers are to be considered, and all magic is relevant and power. From established religions to cults and secret organizations, from the profane to the sublime, they control that which you hear about, read about, and basically live your life and plan your lives around. Okay? Keep in mind that religions and politics and all these things are pretty much seeded with these magical ideas, or these ideas to get you to move in a certain direction.
Blood Cement. From February 9th, that's the latest episode of Ground Zero Lounge that I have for you. Of course, recorded every Monday night in front of a live audience at Dante's Inferno in Portland, Oregon. The Ground Zero Lounge features Clyde Lewis in an audience participation discussion of current events as they relate to the paranormal. 'Not paranormal here, but it's the Panopticon. It's still the Panopticon. You don't know if you're being watched all the time. You just pretty much assume you're being watched all the time. One of the biggest stories, of course, of the last few days is that Facebook membership may be forever. Originally here from Fox News for you, but of course from a blog, the Consumerist blog, noted earlier this week, just this Sunday, that the social networking giant Facebook had quietly made a change to its terms of service on February 4th. Facebook declared that it has perpetual license to use anything you post to your own Facebook page, even if you terminate your account. Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg defended the charge, or rather the change, as necessary in a blog posting that Monday afternoon. This blew up in their face. From Time Magazine, a couple days later, Facebook does an about face on privacy. Behold the two faces of Facebook. It's such a smart young company. It's such a slow learner. Both faces peeked out from under the wreckage of the privacy imbroglio that racked the social network site this week. Yes, it was asinine, a tempest in a teapot, but it underscored a more fundamental problem that continues to plague Facebook. The world's most popular social network is simply not learning from its mistakes. Noting, of course, that they've been called out time and time again with the very invasive nature of the way the interface and the way that the scooping up of all the information covers. Another update and another clip is called The Truth About Facebook, and that's a video that's up on blip.tv. But we took the three basic steps of the story and put it together for you. Of course, Facebook's membership may be forever. Then, of course, the massive Facebook user outcry and protest against the content policy. And then finally, the amazing truth about Facebook.
Well, if you or your friends post pictures of yourself drunk or in other compromising positions on Facebook, you will want to hear this. A change to the company's fine print is raising questions online this morning about what happens to all of the information that you post on your page. Alina Cho is following the story for us. First of all, you shouldn't post pictures of yourself in compromising positions anyway.
Probably not a good idea.
But there is something interesting that has people scratching their heads.
Yeah.
It was actually a blogger that found a change in the fine print.
It's called The Consumer, so we'll get to that in a second. But essentially, we're talking about a TOS, Terms of Service, with respect to Facebook. Kieran, good morning, everybody. And it is probably something that most people who use Facebook have not heard about. About 2 weeks ago, the fine print explaining privacy rights on Facebook quietly and suddenly changed. Now, here's what happened. Facebook removed language that said its ownership of your content would end when you removed that content or closed your account. Now, what does that mean? It means that Facebook now will continue to have access to things like your personal photos and personal information. The blogs, as you might imagine, went crazy. The Consumerist, published by Consumer Reports, responded by saying Facebook's new terms are tantamount to, quote, "We can do anything we want with your content forever." So is that true? Well, possibly, according to legal experts, but Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg issued his own post trying to reassure users that they still control their own information, saying, quote, "In reality, we wouldn't share your information in a way you wouldn't want. The trust you place in us as a safe place to share information is the most important part of what makes Facebook work." Still, some Facebook users are closing their accounts in protest. More than 18,000 members have joined groups against the new terms of service. Here is just some of what is being posted. Quote, "These new terms are beyond insane. Someone has to put a stop to this." Another person who says he's a professional photographer wrote, quote, "Guess I'll be taking my stuff down. Bye-bye, Facebook advertisers. I won't be seeing your ads." And yet another person wrote, "I'm scared knowing one day I might find a picture of me or even a family member that I didn't give permission to be used. I can't even delete anything I previously uploaded because they retain copies, which they will probably sell to some third party to make an easy buck. This sucks." Now, you know, keep in mind, thousands upon thousands of people here and use Facebook. They're perfectly happy. I personally don't have a Facebook account because I might be a little more sensitive than most about my personal information being shared. But, you know, the key thing here is a lot of people agree to those terms of service
right. Without
reading fine print. And I think that's what's surprising to most people now is, wait a minute, I might have to look at this a bit closer.
See, I'm dipping my toes in the Facebook water. I've been being only 14 friends, you know, girlfriends from high school.
You're about to get a lot stuff. More now that you've publicized your Facebook.
What I'm wondering about the situation is, even though the CEO responded, they didn't change those terms.
No, and
so
listen,
it still seems a little murky.
It does. The truth is sometimes when things like this get publicized and more people learn about it and more people protest the change, that sometimes they reverse that. But
right. We'll
have to see what happens.
Because there's also a lot of people that say even if you delete yourself from Facebook and
close
up your account, that still is retained in
their archives.
That's right.
Let's say an email you send, that would be retained in the archives. Yeah, of course. So
anyway,
it's all interesting.
Think twice, guys. I mean, I know you're talking about your own personal pictures that you're just putting out there for the world to see.
I never post drunk photos online.
Yeah, well, you get drunk.
Yeah, you're right.
Do you have a Facebook? Have you thought about the privacy you put at risk? Facebook allows users to post their favorite music, books, movies, their address, hometown, phone number, email, clubs, jobs, educational history, birth dates, sexual orientation, interests, daily schedules, exactly how they are related to friends, upload pictures of themselves, and even political affiliations. Its privacy policy even goes so far as to state it also collects information about you from other sources, such as newspapers and instant messaging services. This information is gathered regardless of your use of the website. Think that's scary? Facebook's term of service state, by posting member content to any part of the website, you automatically grant and you represent and warrant that you have the right to grant to Facebook an irrevocable, perpetual, non-exclusive, transferable, fully paid, worldwide license with the right to sub-license to use, copy, perform, display, reformat, translate, excerpt in whole or in part, and distribute such information and content, and to prepare derivative works of or incorporate into other works such information and content, and to grant and authorize sublicenses of the foregoing. Have you seen Facebook's Pulse feature? Pulse provides statistical trends among universities down to minute details such as percentages of females with conservative views, the student body's top 10 movies, and percentage of students who have read Catcher in the Rye. The so-called privacy policy goes on to say that they may share your information with third parties, including responsible companies with which they have a relationship. Can you think of any marketing group who would pass up buying such valid yet easily collected statistics such as these and others? So maybe they're using us, but is there more? First venture capital money totaled at $500,000 came to the Facebook from venture capitalist Peter Thiel, founder and former CEO of PayPal. He also serves on the board of radical conservative group Vanguard PAC. Further funding came in the form of $12.7 million from venture capital firm Accel Partners. Accel's manager, James Breyer, was former chair of the National Venture Capital Association. Breyer served on National Venture Capital Association's board with Gilman Louie, CEO of InQtel, a venture capital firm established by Central Intelligence Agency in 1999. This firm works in various aspects of information technology and intelligence, including, most notably, nurturing data mining technologies. Breyer has also served on the board of BBN Technologies, a research and development firm known for spearheading the ARPANET, or what we know today as the Internet. In October of 2004, Dr. Anita Jones climbed aboard BBN, along with Gilman Louie. But what is most interesting is Dr. Jones' experience prior to joining BBN. Jones herself served on the board of directors for InQtel, and was previously the director of defense research and engineering for the U.S. Department of Defense. Her responsibilities included serving as an advisor to the Secretary of Defense and overseeing the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. This goes farther than just the initial appearances. DARPA shot to national fame in 2002 when knowledge of the existence of the Information Awareness Office came to light. The IAO stated its mission was to gather as much information as possible about everyone in a centralized location for easy perusal by the United States government, including though not limited to internet activity, credit card purchase history, airline ticket purchases, car rentals, medical records, educational transcripts, driver's licenses, utility bills, tax returns, and any other available data. All of the above raises more questions than answers. Perhaps if Facebook wishes to stay ethically sane, it should enact a policy. What happens in the Facebook stays in the Facebook.
After much kicking and screaming, Facebook users forced the social networking giant to see things their way. Users logged in Wednesday, the terms of service changed back to what they were. There was even a new Facebook Bill of Rights.
Magically, today, it's all back and all is right with the universe, and there's a new Facebook Bill of Rights group. Facebook, so I guess you can't doubt the power of social media.
Facebook executives were quick to make amends after outraged users complained about the recent change in the terms of service. The new language appeared to allow Facebook to retain rights to user content even after a user terminated their Facebook account.
One reason it caused such an uproar is the terms were so overreaching that if you were an artist, if you had a band, if you had written something or drew a picture, and you posted that to one of the public sections of Facebook, technically, according to the terms of service, they were saying that they could actually use that for advertising if they wanted to.
Chris Walters is editor of Consumerist.com. They were first to discover the term change and posted this blog. After the firestorm set off by the blog, Walters says he's glad to see Facebook's had a change of heart.
This is actually a great example of a company needing to talk publicly with its users and ask them for feedback and negotiate a terms of service that the average layperson can read, that it doesn't feel like you're doing your taxes. You don't have to spend 25 minutes parsing a 3,000-word document.
But many say it's also a lesson to users. Don't ignore the fine print and be careful of what you post. After all, who knows where it could end up?
When you put something out on Facebook, you have to assume two things immediately. One, it is absolutely in the public domain, no matter what you think you're doing to protect it. From a privacy standpoint, it's not yours anymore. It's out in Facebook. And it doesn't matter if it's Facebook or the public internet or some other site. It doesn't make any difference where you put stuff. If you put it out there online, anyone can get to it.
Although the original terms of service have been reinstated, Facebook officials made it perfectly clear it's only temporary. Until they've ironed out the details of a new terms of service that both users and Facebook can agree on.
Well, hopefully the new terms of service will still protect Facebook from lawsuits, give them the ability to share content, but will also make it very explicitly clear that when you post something, you keep the rights to it, and you're not giving those away.
In New York, Bonnie Ghosh, The Associated Press.
What happens in Facebook stays in Facebook. Now, of course, we shouldn't be surprised by any of this shit. And the way that this all works is that we all totally willingly give all this information away. And whether we're talking about secret cameras in digital converter boxes, or Yahoo using your info, and we gather personal information on this site, we collect personal data on this site, it's a double-edged sword. Is it the complete technological police state control grid? Or is it just a fancier way to advertise to you? Oh, James, we have the new album you're interested in. It's both. It is the amazing technological police state control grid. But like Huxley says, we're going to love our servitude. There have been a lot of strange things technologically going on. And again, it's hard as so much swirls around to even be able to figure it all out and put it all into context. But I'm always not grasping, but looking for the memes and looking for the through line, if you will. Because it does really seem like a lot of this is a script, in a way. Strange things happening technologically. This next posting, we'll get into that and more. Miltech, that's military technology to you. Crashing subs, cameras, guns, computers, and internet too. First, from the Washington Post. French and UK officials confirm nuclear subs collided in the Atlantic Ocean. Nuclear submarines from Britain and France collided deep in the Atlantic Ocean this month, authorities said Monday in the first acknowledgement of a highly unusual accident. Officials said the low-speed crash did not damage the vessel's nuclear reactors or missiles or cause radiation to leak, but anti-nuclear groups said it was still a frightening reminder of the risks posed by submarines prowling the oceans powered by radioactive material and bristling with nuclear weapons. The first public indication of an accident came when France reported in a little-noticed February 6 statement that one of its submarines has struck a submerged object, perhaps a shipping container. But confirmation of the collision came only after British news media reported it. France's defense ministry said Monday that the sub La Triomphante and the HMS Vanguard, the oldest vessel in Britain's fleet of nuclear-armed submarines, were on routine patrol when they collided in the Atlantic this month. It did not say when, where, or how the accident occurred. Some of the links I have in here for you. Wikipedia has an entry on the Vanguard Triomphant submarine collision. We've also got, of course, the BBC, the British news media, reporting on it. The Associated Press, Daily Mail, Washington Post, and this report from the Associated Press.
Two submarines, two sets of nuclear arms, and one underwater collision. It's worrying some anti-nuclear activists. On Monday, Britain admitted that one of its nuclear-armed submarines collided with a similarly armed French submarine somewhere in the depths of the Atlantic Ocean. Neither country said exactly when the crash occurred, simply stating that it happened sometime earlier this month while both vessels were on patrol. Each sustained minor damage, neither released any radioactivity. There's no word on how many weapons were present, but the British submarine can carry up to 16 nuclear-armed Trident missiles. Both governments say no one was injured. Each submarine returned to a port in its home country after the incident. Lawmakers and critics in both countries are demanding an explanation of how the submarines could have failed to detect each other. Diane Kepley, The Associated Press.
There is another one from independent.co.uk. So, Admiral, what have you got to say about the nuclear submarine crash? But we're going to move on to one from Danger Room to the Homeland phony terror threat. And again, the police state control grid. NYPD cuts cops, but keeps the spy cams for terror defense. Turning New York's financial district into a panopticon, there's that word again, was just supposed to be phase one. The real heart of the NYPD's Lower Manhattan Security Initiative, with a link to read more about that. The writer of this article from Danger Room was repeatedly told that it was going to be more than 800 officers protecting the bridges, tunnels, skyscrapers, landmarks of the most visible terrorist target on the planet. But now, bad economic times are forcing the NYPD to slow down plans to assign 800 officers to the area near Ground Zero and Wall Street, Newsday reports. The surveillance cameras are remaining, however, at least for now. 300 of a planned 3,000 specially equipped electronics eyes have already been deployed. Thousands more are actually owned by the companies of the financial district and are already in place, if not hooked up to the network. On the street, 30 police cars with two roof-mounted cameras have begun reading license plates of passing and parked cars, WCBS-TV notes, and a 28th-floor command center is up and running, monitoring the spy cam feeds. Many of Lower Manhattan's most important sites, like the New York Stock Exchange, are already guarded with vehicle barriers, bomb-sniffing dogs, and M4-carrying officers. But the larger plan, to cover the 1.7-mile area below Canal Street with cops, is now officially a question mark. And it seems as though Danger Room is almost sad. We want all the cops on the streets. But no, they just need the Panopticon Tower. 28th floor command center. Keeping the spy cams for terror defense. Of course, if we jump to securityinfowatch.com, California DMV considering facial recognition, as they all are. My photo is wonderfully on, of course, the digital archive of the Oregon DMV. Got my national ID card. It's ready. From CNN, however, thousands of guns that the U.S. sent to Afghanistan are missing. This is not the first or the last time we're going to be discussing Afghanistan in these close episodes. This from CNN, as well as the Baltimore Sun and the .gov. The .gov. More than one-third of all weapons the U.S. has procured for Afghanistan's government are missing, according to a government report released Thursday, February 12th. The U.S. military failed to maintain a complete inventory record for an estimated 87,000 weapons, or about 36% of the 242,000 weapons that the U.S. procured and shipped to Afghanistan from December 04 through June 08, a U.S. Government Accountability Office report states. Accountability lapses occurred throughout the supply chain, it said. On a different note, in a different headline from bangernews.com, in Maine, dirty bomb parts found in slain man's home. But more on missing weapons and technologies. It's this, or rather in this case, it's 67 computers missing from the Los Alamos Nuclear Weapons Laboratory. 67 computers are missing, including 13 that were lost and stolen in just the past year. Officials say no classified info has been lost. The watchdog group Project on Government Oversight, POGO.org, on last Wednesday released a memo dated February 3rd from an Energy Department's National Nuclear Security Administration outlining the loss of the computers. The memo said, quote, the magnitude of exposure and risk to the laboratory is at best unclear, as little data on these losses has been collected or pursued given their treatment as property management issues. 67 computers missing from Los Alamos. On the tech front, and again, these stories are vaguely connected, another headline, Wikipedia threatens to delete the list of Bilderberg attendees. And that's not the last we're going to hear about Bilderberg. More on that on episode 112. But the New York Times had an amazing article, and we see, of course, the big mainstream media's shilling for things, pushing it openly, whether it's a cashless society or a new world order, in this case from the New York Times, asking the question, do we need a new internet? 2 decades ago, a 23-year-old Cornell University graduate student brought the internet to its knees with a simple software program that skipped from computer to computer at blinding speed, thoroughly clogging the then tiny network in the space of a few hours. The program was intended to be a digital Kilroy was here, just a bit of cybernetic fungus that would unobtrusively wander the net. However, a programming error turned it into a harbinger heralding the arrival of a darker cyberspace, more of a mirror for all of the chaos and conflict of the physical world than a utopian refuge from it. Since then, things have gotten much, much worse. Bad enough that there's the growing belief among engineers and security experts that internet security and privacy have become so maddeningly elusive that the only way to fix the problem is to start over. What a new internet might look like is still widely debated, but one alternative would, in effect, create a gated community where users would give up their anonymity and certain freedoms in return for safety. Today, that's already the case for many corporate and government internet users. As a new and more secure network becomes widely adopted, the current internet might end up as the bad neighborhood of cyberspace. You would enter at your own risk and keep an eye over your shoulder while you were there. Unless we're willing to rethink today's internet, says Nick McCown, a Stanford engineer involved in building a new internet, we're just waiting for a series of public catastrophes. That was driven home late last year when a malicious software program thought to have been unleashed by a criminal gang in Eastern Europe suddenly appeared after easily sidestepping the world's best cyber defenses. Known as Conficker, or Configuration Fucker. It quickly infected more than 12 million computers, ravaging everything from the computer system at a surgical ward in England to the computer networks of the French military. French military sub crashing into British nuclear sub. Conficker remains a ticking time bomb. It now has the power to lash together those infected computers into a vast supercomputer called a botnet that can be controlled clandestinely by its creators. What comes next remains a puzzle. Conficker could be used as the world's most powerful spam engine, perhaps to distribute software programs to trick computer users into purchasing fake antivirus protection, or much worse. It might be also used to shut off entire sections of the internet, but whatever happens, Conficker has demonstrated that the internet remains highly vulnerable to a concerted attack. Rick Wesson, the chief executive of Support Intelligence, a computer consulting firm, said recently, quote, "If you're looking for a digital Pearl Harbor, we now have the Japanese ships streaming toward us on the horizon." New York Times asking, do we need a new internet? And of course, the answer will be for Internet 2. One flashback story to June of 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com. The internet is dead. Long live Internet 2. Of course, without going into too much detail, the idea being that toll roads, like the new toll roads that are being erected, you don't have to go on them yet. There may be some ways around them, but slowly they're going to let the old roads die off. And we're going to be veered on into the new toll roads, into the new gated communities. Where everything, of course, will be tracked and traced in the technological police state control grid. But jumping back to my other favorite alternative news source in Portland, Oregon, like Clyde Lewis at the Ground Zero Lounge, my man Alex Ansari, and Outside the Box. He recently, after not seeing any new episodes from him in a little while, we all got tech problems. We all have struggles to get our episodes up on time, myself included. But we got episodes 187, 188, and 189 from Outside the Box. We're going to hear a rapid clip from each. First, 187, Alex discusses an alarming spike in violence and crime that struck the nation, including random mass shootings here in Portland, Oregon, or rather, a random mass shooting in Portland, Oregon, and discussion on House Legislation 645, of course, the National Emergency Centers Act, the creation of new FEMA camps, as well as the Constitution-free zones in the United States. Then, in episode 188, Alex discusses a new report about how excessive TV viewing damages children and the damage still being done to adults are hooked on the box. And he also reports on the new Navy war game drills set to launch in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Washington, Oregon, and California. Thirdly, finally, episode 189, Alex talks about how a record number of mainstream publications are publicly calling for a new world order and how people are being trained to accept this new reality. He also discusses Operation Blackjack, a comic strip featured on the London Telegraph's website, in which the plot depicts several false flag events, martial law, and the creation of a North American Union. I believe we've gone over in smaller detail on a lot of these stories that we're going to hear Alex go over in just a minute. Of course, I implore you to check out the whole hour-long TV show Outside the Box, originally shot and broadcast here by the Portland Community Media. Of course, one of the last bastions of citizen media, some of the public access airwaves. Alex Ansari, Outside the Box, episodes 187, 88, and 189.
Our reporting begins tonight with a close-in focus on the level of violence being seen in America today. In fact, whatever reason why. In just a matter of a couple days, we've seen a number of mass shootings and violent crimes in the United States. Some people are speculating that this is just another simple reaction to the economic difficulties that we're facing, the stress of everyday urban life. But the question is, why are there so many murders and killings happening in a short span of time? Regretfully, we just had the worst mass shooting in Portland's history just a couple days ago, 5 days ago, to be exact. And actually walked by the murder scene about an hour earlier before it happened. I was having Thai food across the street. I was on my way home, caught the news then, and it wasn't until the next day that all the facts were in. I'm telling you now, there's a lot more that's going to be changing also on the local level. But of course, they have us focus simply on Sam Adams and his sexual life, and I'm not a fan of Sam Adams' behavior, nor am I a fan of the local media, whether it be Portland Mercury, the Portland Tribune, Willamette Week, or the Oregonian. The short-sightedness of many of these writers I find to be very alarming in a lot of the fact that I don't see other people asking the big questions. What does Sam Adams feel about the militarization of law enforcement on the local level? How does Sam Adams feel about black helicopters over the city? People go, well, he can't do anything, he's just a mayor. Well, actually, if you look at Potter, he invited Homeland Security to come in and top off four. They requested as well, but Potter was enthusiastic about it because it equaled more revenue. It manifested more revenue for the city to fix roads and whatnot. So really, it's a deal with the devil to a certain extent to allow this force to come in, a force that appears to be modeled after Nazi Germany, to come in and dictate how we respond in a unified form to an attack, a threat, a natural disaster, or any disaster. It's been declared so by the executive branch of the U.S. government, not the legislative or any other. The executive branch, that's what those executive orders are for, that Barack Obama has not overturned. So when you look at the situation at hand, I'd like to hear the local media ask about Sam Adams and his opinion on that particular issue, as well as many other issues. Sam Adams is also for a toll road between Oregon and Washington. We're seeing more reports of toll roads and private corporations having ownership over these toll roads, or them at least having the lease to it for a number of years. We're seeing this throughout the country, including Texas. So I have some major questions that I don't see the local media asking, and there are other things also taking place that most people are not aware of. So mark my words, we are running out of time to change a wide variety of things on the local, state, national, and international level. We're looking at something that could be propaganda, or it could be a warning to the people about the things to come. We're going to be looking at the London Telegraph here in a moment, and they recently produced a series of comic book strips in the London Telegraph for the arts section, depicting martial law, cities in the United States blown up, possible false flags, to usher in a police state, and we also see suggestions that a North American Union is coming. There isn't any explanation in this particular comic book strip as to what the author's intention is. Again, are they warning us or is this propaganda? There's no description whatsoever, and they've released four parts to this Operation Blackjack comic book strip, and they just released part four, they released part three a couple weeks ago. So people are alarmed by this, how it's strikingly similar to the stuff that we're talking about on this show and some of the things that others are talking about in the alternative media, the concept of the breakup of the U.S. or the concept of a North American Union, civil unrest, martial law, things of that nature. So with that, we're going to go through the slideshow piece by piece. You make up your own minds as to what you believe, as to why you think this is being put out there. Again, is this a warning or is this something along the lines of predictive programming? Like in a movie, first we see it, and then it manifests, and we go, oh yeah, we saw that in a movie, yeah, it's reality now. You know, people don't go, well, wait a minute, why did they put this in a movie years ago before it happened? Like with 9/11, and things like the Lone Gunman episode, and things of that nature. The opposite happens. They just seem to accept it in a weird, bizarre way.
That's going to just about do it for this relatively short B-side 111 of MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to once again give the last word to the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul. There's a lot of new clips, such as Dr. Paul on the Senate stimulus compromise, slamming born-again budget conservatives, the stimulus being, of course, the waste of money, and an interview from 1988... where, of course, even then, Ron Paul was talking about the banksters. Those are all links and all other new videos that you can check out. However, the one we're going to check out here and go out on is Ron Paul asking the question, what if the American people learned the truth? I got this video thanks to cspanjunkie.org and lourockwell.org, where it is posted and it is said, this is one of the most powerful messages ever delivered by anyone on the floor of the United States House of Representatives. Congressman Ron Paul's searing series of questions cuts through the lies, evasions, fabrications, and untruths at the heart of the regime. This four-minute statement is the courageous summation of all he's seen and spoken of in his over 30 years as a conscience of America. For how long and at what dire peril can the nation continue to ignore these long festering buried truths he exposes? Never been more proud to be a supporter of Dr. Paul than after hearing and seeing this. So before we play it and before we go out, thank you to all those who dig the show and pass it on and check out the site and ask questions and say, you're really into that conspiracy stuff since you moved out west, aren't you? Yes, and you should be too. I'll talk to you tomorrow on episode 112 from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network, where we kick it out live on the flagship show, where I'm not huddled in my living room and dimly lit computer corner. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. And again, thanks to James Corbett for the talk we had today. So we'll have more on that when it's all posted up and out there for you. So, let's not quote Webster Tarpley this time. Let's go out with Ron Paul. What if the American people learned the truth?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I have a few questions for my colleagues. What if our foreign policy of the past century is deeply flawed and has not served our national security interests? What if we wake up one day and realize that a terrorist threat is a predictable consequence of our meddling in the affairs of others and has nothing to do with us being free and prosperous? What if propping up repressive regimes in the Middle East endangers both the United States and Israel? What occupying countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and bombing-packed Pakistan is directly related to the hatred directed toward us? What if someday it dawns on us that losing over 5,000 American military personnel in the Middle East since 9/11 is not a fair trade-off for the loss of nearly 3,000 American citizens, no matter how many Iraqi, Pakistani, and Afghan people are killed or displaced? What if we finally decide that torture, even if called enhanced interrogation technique, is self-destructive and produces no useful information, and that contracting it out to a third world nation is just as evil? What if it is finally realized that war and military spending is always destructive to the economy? What if all wartime spending is paid for through the deceitful and evil process of inflating and borrowing? What if we finally see that wartime conditions always undermine personal liberty? What if conservatives who preach small government wake up and realize that our interventionist foreign policy provides the greatest incentive to expand the government? What if conservatives understood once again that their only logical position is to reject military intervention and managing an empire throughout the world? What if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve special interests? What if we as a nation came to realize that the quest for empire eventually destroys all great nations? What if Obama has no intention of leaving Iraq? What if a military draft is being planned for the wars that will spread if our foreign policy is not changed? What if the American people learn the truth, that our foreign policy has nothing to do with national security, that it never changes from one administration to the next? What if war in preparation for war is a racket serving the special interest? What if President Obama is completely wrong about Afghanistan and turns out worse than Iraq and Vietnam put together? What if Christianity actually teaches peace and not preventive wars of aggression? What if diplomacy is found to be superior to bombs and bribes in protecting America? What happens if my concerns are completely unfounded? Nothing. But what happens if my concerns are justified and ignored? Nothing good. And I yield back the balance of my time.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my track.
And that concludes our program for tonight. Yo.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.